Let's face it, multiple choice questions. If you've done any kind of formal learning or, professional exams, you've definitely come across them. They're just everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're efficient, right, for testing a lot of knowledge quickly. And the scoring is, well, objective.
True.
But that simplicity can be a bit misleading. Doing well on them isn't just about having the facts down. It's also about understanding, well, how the test itself works.
Exactly. And that's what we're diving into today. We're going beyond the usual, just study more advice. We've looked at a bunch of university guides, different test-taking strategy docs, to pull out some really practical techniques, things that can actually give you an edge. We'll break down how the questions are put together, talk about smart strategies for during the test, and also point out those common traps people fall into. The goal here is really to help you feel more confident tackling these things.
Okay, so let's start with the absolute foundation, understanding the question itself. It sounds, well, basic, I know.
Yeah, it seems obvious.
But really reading the instructions carefully is so key. Different exams might have slightly different ways they want you to mark things, you know?
Ah, okay. Little details you could miss.
Exactly. And missing those can cause easy mistakes right off the bat.
Okay, so pay attention to the overall directions, and then what about each specific question?
You need that same focus, maybe even more intense, really scrutinize every word, underline the key terms, and pay special attention to those little words that flip the meaning entirely.
Like not or except.
Precisely. Or even words like always versus sometimes. They're critical clues. Underlining them is such a simple trick, but it keeps your brain focused on what's actually being asked.
Right, because the question asking what's not a symptom is totally different from what is a symptom.
Completely different task for your brain.
And it's not just spotting keywords, is it? It's like really getting what they're after.
Yes, understanding the intent. Is it asking for the single best answer where maybe a couple look okay?
Or just an answer that's technically correct.
Exactly. Knowing that difference helps you figure out how to judge the options. And, you know, the structure of the question itself gives hints. You've got the stem,
That's the question part.
right, the question or the incomplete sentence, and then you have the options, but only one is right. The others are called distractors.
Ah, distractors. Designed to look tempting.
Exactly. They're built to seem plausible, often playing on common mistakes or partial knowledge. If something feels familiar, but you can't quite nail down why it's fully correct, it might be a really well-made distractor.
Okay, so we're reading carefully, underlining keywords. We think we get the question. What's the next move before we even look at A, B, C, D?
Right. This is a powerful one. Try to answer the question in your own head first.
Really? Before looking? But the answer's right there.
That's the point. By coming up with your own answer first, you set a benchmark. It makes you much less likely to get pulled in by those tempting but wrong distractors.
Okay, that makes sense. They designed those to trick you if you're just browsing.
Test creators are good at making options seem right, especially if they tap into common misunderstandings or, you know, are only half true.
So I think of my answer, then what?
Then you scan the options. But you're not just reading them passively. You're actively looking for the answer that matches what you already decided.
Or something really close to it, similar ideas or words.
Exactly. It changes your whole approach. You're validating your knowledge against their choices, not just letting their choices steer you.
It's like tuning your brain first.
Yeah.
Okay, but what if I try that and my answer isn't there? Or I just draw a blank on the question.
Perfect lead-in to the next big strategy, the process of elimination. This is your go-to when you aren't immediately sure.
Okay, crossing out the wrong ones. Seems straightforward, but I bet there's more to it.
Oh, definitely. You need specific reasons to eliminate. The easiest ones are answers you absolutely know are wrong. Maybe they're illogical or just absurd.
Yeah, sometimes there's one that's completely random, like it doesn't even belong.
Exactly. Totally unrelated to the question. Eliminate that right away.
Okay, what else?
You can also get rid of choices that directly contradict stuff you definitely learned. And pay attention to grammar. Does the answer choice fit smoothly with the question stem? If it makes the sentence sound awkward or grammatically wrong,
Probably not the right one.
good chance it isn't.
What about when, like, two answers seem really similar or connected somehow?
Good point. Sometimes choices can rule each other out logically. It gets a bit complex, but if one option existing makes another impossible based on what you know, or think about absolute words. Be very suspicious of answers with always, never, none, every.
Because it only takes one exception to make them false.
Exactly. They make such strong claims. On the flip side, answers with words like usually, often, sometimes, generally.
They leave room for exceptions.
Right. They're often more likely to be correct because reality is usually more nuanced.
So history is always 100% accurate? Probably wrong. History often reflects the victor's viewpoint, more likely. Makes sense. Okay, what about the classic all of the above and none of the above? Those feel like traps sometimes.
They can feel like a gamble. For all of the above, treat each option, A, B, C, like a mini true-false question. If you can confidently say, yes, A is right, and yes, B looks right too, then all of the above is a strong contender.
But what's the catch?
The catch is, if you find even one option that you are sure is wrong,
then all of the above has to be wrong.
Exactly. It breaks the chain.
Got it. That's a clear rule. And none of the above.
Generally, it's less likely to be the correct answer than all of the above, statistically speaking. But don't dismiss it automatically. You still have to check all the other options carefully. If you've gone through elimination and you're pretty sure A, B, and C are incorrect,
then none of the above might actually be it.
It could be. Don't be afraid to pick it if the others are clearly wrong.
Okay, so eliminate carefully, watch out for absolutes, handle the above options strategically. What if two answers are, like, direct opposites?
Ah, good question. If two options present totally opposite ideas, there's a decent chance one of them is the right answer.
Why is that?
Because the question is likely testing if you understand the specific difference between those two opposing points.
Okay, focus on those two. And what about double negatives?
Yes. Be super careful with those. In the question stem or the answers, two negatives usually cancel out and make a positive, right?
Right. Like, it's not unlikely means it's likely.
Exactly. It's easy to misread that if you're rushing.
Oh.
So slow down and decode any double negatives.
Good tip. Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Can the way a question or answer is written give us clues, like the structure itself?
Sometimes, yes. Grammar can help. If the stem ends with an, for example?
The answer probably starts with a vowel sound.
Highly likely. Also, look for keywords from the question stem being repeated in an answer choice.
Oh, interesting. Like the echo of the question.
Yeah, sometimes the correct answer just naturally uses the same terminology to make the connection clear.
I've also heard this, maybe it's a myth, that the longest answer is often the right one. Any truth to that?
Well, there can be a tendency for that. Sometimes the correct answer needs more words, more qualification to be perfectly accurate.
But don't count on it.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Don't pick it just because it's long. Content first. Always. But if you're stuck between a long one and short ones, it might be a slight nudge. Maybe.
Okay, a tiny factor, maybe. Mm. And what about look-alike options, where they're worded very similarly?
Ah, those are designed to test precise understanding. If you see two or three answers that look almost the same, compare them word by word.
Find the difference.
Yes. That tiny difference in wording is usually the key. It separates the best answer from the ones that are just close.
This is great stuff. Okay, let's talk about managing time. During the actual test, what are the key strategies there?
Time management is huge. Rushing leads to silly mistakes. So, first tip. Go through and answer the questions you know confidently first.
Get the easy points locked in.
Exactly. It builds confidence, gets you rolling, and banks points early on, reduces that initial anxiety too.
Makes sense. What if I had a question that just stops me cold?
Don't get stuck. If you read it, maybe read it again, and you're still drawing a blank after, say, a minute or so.
Skip it.
Skip it for now. Put a little mark next to it, whatever system works for you, and move on. Come back to the tough ones later after you've tackled the rest.
Do the knowns, skip the toughs, circle back. How do I budget time overall?
Good question. Before you start, quickly glance at the whole test. How many questions? Any sections weighted differently?
I get the lay of the land.
Yeah. Then do a quick calculation. Like if it's 60 questions in 60 minutes, you have about a minute per question.
But you need time to review.
Right. So aim for slightly less than a minute per question on average, maybe 50 seconds.
Yeah.
That builds in a buffer at the end for review. Always leave 5-10 minutes for review if you can.
Okay, that review time. Is it okay to change answers? I always heard, stick with your first instinct.
That is a very common myth, and it's often wrong.
Really?
Yes. If you're reviewing and you reread a question and realize you misunderstood it the first time, or maybe another question later jogged your memory,
and you have a good reason to change it,
then absolutely change it. Trust your corrected understanding. The danger is just randomly changing answers because you're second guessing without a solid reason.
Right. Change it if you have new insight, not just because you're nervous.
Exactly. Informed changes are good. Panic changes are bad.
Got it. Any final checks before handing it in to avoid those facepalm moments later?
Definitely. Do a quick scan of your answer sheet. Did you accidentally skip any, leave any blank?
Oh, yeah. Check for blanks.
Make sure every answer is marked clearly in the right spot. If it's a bubble sheet, double check the question number matches the bubble row. Rah. It's easy to get off by one.
A nightmare scenario.
And erase any stray marks. Sometimes scanners can pick those up. Just a final clean sweep.
Okay, so we've covered understanding questions, eliminating answers, managing time, reviewing. But what if, after all that, I'm still stuck on a question I skipped? Like, truly have no idea. Should I guess?
The guessing game. This depends entirely on one thing. Is there a penalty for wrong answers?
Okay, like a guessing penalty.
Exactly. Some tests deduct points for wrong answers. Others just give zero. If there is no penalty,
then always guess.
Always guess. Never leave it blank. Even a random guess gives you a chance, maybe 1 in 4 or 1 in 5. An educated guess after eliminating 1 or 2 options gives you even better odds.
Okay, no penalty, always guess. What if there is a penalty?
Then you have to be more careful. Weigh the risk. If you can confidently eliminate, say, 2 out of 4 options.
So it's a 50-50 shot between the remaining 2.
Right. In that case, guessing is usually still worth the risk. The odds are in your favor. But if you look at the question and you genuinely have no clue about any of the options, you can't eliminate anything.
And there's the penalty.
Then leaving it blank might be the safer bet. Avoid losing points. But only if you truly have zero basis for guess.
That's a really important difference based on the test rules. Okay, we spent a lot of time on during the test. What about before? Any quick reminders on prep?
Yeah, I mean, obviously none of these strategies work without knowing the material, right? That's foundational.
Right, gotta study.
Thorough, consistent study. Aim to understand, not just memorize. And definitely find out the exam format beforehand. Number of questions, timing, weighting, and definitely that penalty rule we just talked about.
Know the rules of the game.
Exactly. And if you can get your hands on practice tests or old exams, do them. It's the best way to practice timing and get used to the question style.
So knowing the material plus having these strategies, that's the winning combo.
That's pretty much it. These techniques aren't magic, but using them smartly, strategically, it definitely gives you a real advantage. It helps you show what you actually know.
Well, this has been super helpful, really breaking down how to tackle these tests. So for everyone listening, now that you have these tools, maybe think about how you'll approach that next multiple choice test differently. What's one thing you heard today you're definitely going to try?